He is an anchor reporter for Sportsnet Soccer Central. We say a very good afternoon to James Sharman. Hey, James, how's your day going?
George, it's not going too badly. Let's just put it that way. I was allowed to put my fan hat on for a couple of hours, and I'll be putting my broadcaster hat on soon enough. But it's been a fun Saturday so far, yeah.
What was more surprising, that England's in the semifinals or they won on penalties at the World Cup?
That's a really good point. They're both stunning. I didn't see either one happening. I think the fact that they both happened in the same World Cup within a week of themselves is just maybe the finally the football gods are smiling on this team. It's been just a great run, and the unimaginable has happened. You know, this team's playing well, attractive football, win a shootout, get to the semi-finals for the first time since 1990. It's been glorious so far.
James, I know watching the broadcast against Colombia when they won that PK shootout, and a lot was made how Gareth Southgate made the players, you know, they practice PKs since March, and they were ridiculously meticulous in how they're doing it. So much so, the players even practiced how they'd walk up to the spot and put the ball down. Was too much being made about that? Because clearly the results are the proof's in the pudding. They won a shootout. But it was too much made about that? Or, you know,
you win. I don't think so. I mean, the evidence is shootouts are not a lottery, as some people think they are. It's not luck or fluke. It's a real skill. And Gareth Southgate, who missed one of the most important penalties in England history back at Euro 96, knows all about that. You've got to have the skill to obviously pick the corner. Also, the mental strength, which is a skill in its own right, as well. And he knew that you have to be prepared, meticulous, and mechanical in how you approach penalties. Make everyone the same way, you know, have a routine you've done over and over and over again in practice. And obviously you can't quite duplicate the pressure, we know that, but still you can make it mechanical and make it something the players are used to. So I think it's not the only coach to do it. Many nations do it, but in the past, England managers have said, nah, we don't practice them. No, they'll figure it out when it happens. And as you see in the history, it doesn't work out too well that way. So, no, I think it was the right thing to do, and it worked out. Now, listen, they could go into a shootout against Croatia or Russia and lose it doing the same thing. But it's just refreshing to see an England team taking them seriously for once.
Does it matter, James, that all the players play in the Premier League? None of them are playing in other leagues around the world. It's all domestic, and they're at this point the semifinals in the World Cup. Does that make extra headlines in England that this team is just solely based in England?
Well, you know, they're all very likable players and very well-known players, I guess, familiar players to the fan base. I don't think it makes a big difference. I mean, we've seen other nations, France, Brazil, Spain, dominate soccer at times with their players spread around the world. So it's not that big a deal, but because the average England fan knows these players really well because of their you know, escapades in the Premier League, perhaps there's a closeness, more of a togetherness perhaps with the fans and the players. But I think regardless, England could be, you know, all based in Brazil. The fact that England gets to a World Cup semi-final, that alone is going to just drive this fan base who are just gasping for some kind of success.
We always hear the comparison, and you can speak to this. You're a guy, you're born over there, you came here. Leaf fans and England soccer fans are pretty much the same. It's not like, it feels like there's a bit of entitlement, but you're both used to soul-crushing defeats. Is that the best parallel in sports, England soccer team and the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I think it might be. In fact, a guy today on Twitter hammered me and hammered the Leafs and England at the same time.
Somebody on Twitter, James? Oh, that happens?
Imagine that. I know. Imagine that. I mean, I'm a big Leaf fan as well. And, you know, it's been the same time since they last won, or give or take a couple of years. There's been moments where you think they've taken that next step, you know, where they've reached a semi-final or a conference final. And think, man, this could be the year. But they lose, and they lose in a horrible way, be it, you know, losing 4-1 from being 4-1 up against Boston, or in you know, an overtime to LA, or in a World Cup semi-final to Germany on penalties. Real similarities. And the fan base, I mean, they're a self-loathing bunch, be it English or Leaf fans, right? We've been through the ringer. I think we should be allowed to appreciate this. And I said on Twitter today, I said, we can say it's been a fantastic World Cup for England. You know, we shouldn't feel guilty saying that. Just like if the Leafs, with Tavares, you know, reach a conference final or a Stanley Cup final, we can say it's been a great playoff run. Why not? We're allowed this.
Right. And is this, and I know heading into the World Cup, this was supposed to be a very young team, and they're actually building the real English side will be a powerhouse in 2 years at the Euro Cup. This is clearly all way ahead of schedule, is it not? And why not really win the whole damn thing now, right?
Yeah, why not? Exactly. I mean, it is entering this tournament. It was really, like you said, one eye on Euro and even Qatar in 4 years' time. England won the under-17 World Cup last year and the under-20 World Cup as well. So there's kids coming through who aren't in this team yet. So they put the building blocks in place. They've changed the way English soccer is coached at the youth grade levels. They're investing in that level. And we're seeing the rewards in the age group teams. We didn't quite imagine seeing this team do so well so soon. Now, listen, in fairness, that they've had an easy half of the draw. You know, they still got to play the games and beat them, of course. But it was a decent group phase. Colombia was not a world beater, but a good team. Sweden, the same thing. So they're getting there, but they haven't really been tested by a top nation just yet. So that's not England's fault. We shouldn't take it away from them. But this is still very much a young team transitioning to what could be a very, very good team.
So clearly, looking ahead to the next quarterfinal match, the final one of the quarterfinals, it's the host Russians against Croatia. Obviously, if you're England, you're cheering for the Russians to get it done, because we all heard, and I think we may even talked about this, this is the worst host nation we've ever seen at a World Cup, and they've got all the way to the quarterfinals, and you have to tip your cap to the Russians. They upset the Spaniards, who I don't even know what they were doing in that match, James, just passing the ball back and forth, no attack, but credit to the Russians. Obviously, you want to see Russia in the semifinals instead of Croatia.
Yeah, you do. Listen, with absolute respect to Russia, who have done, you know, amazingly well considering what we thought they were, they're not a very good team. And they beat a Spanish team by two blocks of four players, top of the box, defend. Spain, for some reason, had no thought to actually attack in the final third, just lateral passes. It's a really strange match, that one. But give credit to Russia that they are where they are. They're in the quarterfinals. And they're obviously a tough team to break down, a good defensive team. But Croatia today, for me, is an outstanding side. They are the best team in this half of the draw. Very close to England, mind you. It's not, you know, a wash either way. But I'd say that Croatia's a favorite, and they should beat Russia. But they were held tight by Denmark as well. You know, don't forget, they almost went out there. If not for penalties, they would have gone out. So it's going to be close, but you're right. If you're an England fan, you really want Russia because you think you can deal with them. If you can deal with Sweden's defensive structure, you should be able to deal with Russia's defense structure, but I still think you're going to see Croatia get through that one today.
Anchor reporter for Sportsnet Soccer Central, James Sharman, joining us here on Sportsnet Today. I'm George. Just recapping what happened yesterday, France got past Uruguay. They're off to the semifinals, and Belgium disposed of Brazil 2-1. First on France, to me, James, when I look at that roster, it is just laden with talent, and it's a scary thought for teams left in this tournament that I don't think the French have even hit their gear yet, and yet they're in the semifinals, and they haven't even played their best football yet, James.
Yeah, I think you're right, George. If there's one team in this tournament that has an extra gear still, it's definitely France. They've looked good in patches. I thought they looked much better at times yesterday, beating a disappointing Uruguay team, in fairness. But they have such quality in their attacking play in particular. The midfield's rock solid, and you know, N'Golo Kante and Paul Pogba are playing superb football. And at the back, they have, you know, wonderful players, you know, led by the goalkeeper Lloris. So, you know, they are a team that probably should be the favourites at this point to win the World Cup. I think some people have them before the World Cup winning it, of course. But playing Belgium, I mean, that's going to be some match. Two attacking teams. Still two teams yet to hit their peak, I think. So it's going to be fascinating. But yeah, Le Bleu, you know, before this tournament, we thought that Didier Deschamps, the manager, was a weak link and that he could be the man why they wouldn't progress. Well, he's got the job done so far, as has Roberto Martinez at Belgium, who we thought the same things of, as some people thought Gareth Southgate in England. So for all these you know, managers who are really fighting for their jobs and for respect, they're doing great and the team's doing great.
Watching that Brazil-Belgium match yesterday, obviously Belgium scoring twice on the counter, terrific. I thought Belgium was very lucky to win that game yesterday. I thought Brazil was all over them in the second half. Belgium was doing a great job of just hanging on, and credit to them for holding on to the 2-1 victory. But I want to ask, what are their chances against France? Because I know this is the golden age of Belgian football. And that's the side, I think, 2 years ago at Euro Cup, James, we all thought, this is a dark horse, potentially can win the tournament when you look at the talent. And I think, did they kind of fly under the radar just a little bit heading into this tournament because they disappointed so much 2 years ago?
Well, I think because they've been the dark horse for a couple of, you know, tournaments now, we thought, oh man, it's Belgium once again. Are they going to do the same as they always do, you know, and just promise so much and deliver so little. But I think, you know, looking at the players, you know, 1 through 11 and the bench, they're so good. They're all operating at the top of their clubs in the biggest leagues in the world. So they very much can cause France a real headache. I thought they were actually very good yesterday. Brazil, you're right, they could have won. Brazil had the chances. It was a great match. I thought it was a real even match. Brazil, you know, certainly they were denied by some big saves by Courtois in goal for Belgium. But man, that team on the break, when they break on the counterattack, yeah, they are frightening. They're so quick. And we saw Kevin De Bruyne, who's arguably the best player in English football, have his best game of the World Cup. He bossed that game, I thought, at times, and he was absolutely superb. Eden Hazard, again, another player who's been at the top of the English game for a long time at Chelsea. He was just instrumental as well. And I thought they were, you know, deserving winners in that, you know, it's a pretty even game. And, you know, perhaps Brazil disappointed a little bit. They weren't as tight as they had been in qualifying, certainly. But Belgium, full credit, you know, the golden generation has now delivered. They've made a World Cup semi-final. Can they make a final? That will be the match to watch, I think, in the semis.
James, I don't think I've ever seen a Brazil side where people were rooting more against. And that's the team, you know, they're the spirit of the game. Everybody loves Brazil. They play the attractive football. And is that all because of Neymar's antics that people were anti-Brazil? Because it's frustrating to watch a player with such incredible ability have to resort to doing that. Is this the first time you think a lot of people were hating on a team that everybody loves to watch?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, certainly I thought they would be the most likable team at the World Cup, if not for old number 10 there, Neymar, who always does this. I mean, he's a wonderful talent, right? Didn't have a good World Cup, though. Had his moments, but it's the antics, the theatrics, which just almost overshadow the greater play. And, you know, we saw some great goals. We saw Philippe Coutinho score a couple of beautiful goals earlier in the tournament. But we will remember this World Cup, I think, for Neymar's antics. And it's funny watching yesterday, you know, when he was fouled, most occasions he would jump back up straight away. So he realized that the narrative forming around him, and maybe his coach spoke to him. He still dove a couple of times, hoping for penalties, but, you know, who doesn't do that nowadays? But the embellishment wasn't quite where it was. So maybe he's growing up, but I just don't see it. He's always been that way. He wasn't as bad, actually, at Barcelona. He seemed to operate well, you know, under the shadow of Leo Messi. But then he moves to PSG a couple of years ago now for the money and for the fame. And it really came out once again, the insolence. It was, you know, not fun to watch at all. So it's a shame, you're right, because Brazil, they are still a great team to watch. I mean, they always have that great defensive foundation, but they also have that explosiveness in attack, which was missing a little bit this World Cup, I thought.
I'm going to ask you this next question, and I don't know if you might just be a little biased because England's in the last four for the first time since 1990. That's fine. But James, in all my 39 years on this earth, I have never watched a more entertaining World Cup. 94 was awesome when I was a kid watching it, and you saw Brazil. But just game in, game out, has this been the best World Cup of your lifetime?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and I remember my first one was 86. That I remember well. I vaguely remember 82, but really 86 and every World Cup since then. And without doubt, it's been the most unpredictable. You know, there's been such great drama, as there always is in World Cups, but some really good games. But the fact that is, you know, that these fresh faces, be it from the collective team standpoint or from the individual player standpoint, coming through in the big stage, so as if we're at the beginning of this new era of international football where World Cups and European Championships are more wide open. It's been just breathtaking every single game. Only 1-0, George. I mean, think about that. This has not been a defensive World Cup. It's been an attacking World Cup, and it's not finished just yet. So I think that we've seen the likes of Sweden in the quarterfinals, you know, England into a semi-final, Russia doing what they're doing, you know. The old guard are still there, and I really think the Germanys, the world and Spain's, they're not going to just, you know, run away and hide. They'll be back for Euro in 2 years' time. Watch out for them. But I just think that the world's suddenly a lot bigger as far as there's more teams, there's more parity, there's more players playing in top leagues around the world, playing in big games, not overwhelmed by the occasion. And as a result, we're seeing really wide-open tournaments. So it's great, you know, and it might rewind when we go to 48 teams in a few years' time. But, hey, I'll be in Canada, so who cares?
Yeah, for sure. James, before I let you go, there's rumors, and soccer rumors are always, you can take them with a grain of salt, but a lot of rumors linking Ronaldo potentially to a move from Juventus. How does that shift the balance of power in European football, more specifically for the Champions League? Obviously, Real Madrid winning three straight. Does a move to Juventus, what does that do for Ronaldo, and what does that mean for Juventus moving forward? And Ronaldo, we know, was terrific this season, was terrific for Portugal. What does that mean for the balance of European football if, in fact, he does go to Juventus?
Yeah, I'm fascinated by this. I'm actually stunned by it, really. I thought he could well leave Real Madrid because that's been an unhappy marriage for some time now. But to go to the Serie A, which hasn't been the fashionable destination in the last number of years because it hasn't got the same money as England or Spain or even France with PSG in particular. So I was really surprised by that, but maybe it's a case of him saying, listen, I've dominated English football, I've dominated Spanish football, now I'm going to dominate Italian football, the three big leagues, and make a name for myself with a team that's going to win the Serie A again. They've won it for, I think, seven straight years now, and a team that's that close to winning the Champions League, they've got to the final a few times, haven't made that final push. And, you know, if you win that with the Juventus, you're going to be idolized forever in Italy and with the Bianconeri because that's a huge fan base and a huge team. What it does for Juventus, I mean, listen, they get one of the all-time great players. They get a guy that's still one of the great center forwards in world football, but it's a four-year deal. It's 100 million euros, apparently. That's what they'll cost just to get the player, which is a lot for a guy that's 34. And at some point, it must decline, right? We keep hearing this, but he doesn't. At some point, he must decline. But obviously, it'll make them better. But then they're losing Gigi Buffon. He's leaving to PSG. So they're losing maybe the greatest goalkeeper of all time at the same time. Meanwhile, the dominoes keep falling. Does this mean Neymar? It could well be going to Real Madrid to replace him, which is a big rumor as well. So, you know, as much as we love the hockey trade wire, yeah, the soccer transfer wild, George, you know, this is absolutely nuts. And it's been kind of quiet because of the World Cup. But you wait until that final's played July 15th, then you'll see all these rumors popping up and all these news. So it makes it interesting for sure. And I tell you what, he'll look good in the black and white stripes if that's where he ends up.
Does this mean he won't make his way to the MLS eventually?
I think he still will. I mean, he says that he wants to play till he's 41, right? And he's in supreme condition still. So yeah, he might put 2 or 3 years in the Serie A and then try and dominate MLS, you know, and then retire eventually. So yeah, I think he'll still go there, but just not now.
I would take Ronaldo for TFC at 41 any day of the week. James Sherman. Yeah, no kidding. James Sherman, anchor reporter for Sportsnet Soccer Central. James, thanks for doing this. Drink in the win and enjoy the semifinal.
Thanks, George. Chat soon.
There he goes, James Sherman on England's big 2-0 win.